I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 509. Packed with nerdery, Esh satisfies. This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl Gaming Tech Gadget and Anime Podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi.
Panda.
Hi.
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 Hi. How you doing? Did you have a good week?
Hi.
Did you have a good week?
I've
had coffee.
Good. I can tell.
And there's nothing in my coffee except caffeine. And not sugar.
Not sugar.
Yeah, went with a sugar substitute.
Wow.
I'm trying to live that life. I'm trying to live that life.
Look at you.
Right? Making good life choices. Good life choices.
One day at a time.
You know? Nope. Not going to sing. I am going to sing. Let me not lie. I'm just going to try to not sing so early. So, thank you guys so much for grabbing this podcast episode. We're super excited to talk about a bunch of nerdy things. Oh my lord, is there so much nerdiness to talk about this week. We got anime to talk about, we got games to talk about, we got gaming news to talk about, we got tech to talk about, because there's been some developments in the technological world.
Things have been happening.
So don't be surprised by just how nerd-packed this episode is. Like, it's just so full of nerdery. That's why I had to drink the coffee, because
all the nerdery.
I need all the energy I can get to talk about everything. So I'm going to kick things off this episode because I have to get my stuff off my chest.
Because go right ahead.
It's been like sitting with me all week. There have been a bunch of things that have happened. I want to lead off with Bethesda's announcement about their new review policy, because it was really interesting to see various enthusiast press, legit, I'm using air quotes there, video game press,
I felt them,
outlets, and then obviously, you know, community journalists like us react to the news. So first and foremost, basically Bethesda put out a release this week and said, hey, you know, a lot of people have been talking because Dishonored 2 is getting ready to come out, and there hasn't been a lot of review content about it out there. And, you know, for most games, especially, you know, AAA titles that are coming, there is from the usual suspects of sites, you know, the Polygons, Kotakus of the world, Destructoid as well. The early reviews of the game before the game comes out, typically, you know, anywhere between 1 or 2 weeks before the game actually releases, that run down the game, usually if they're not dicks, at least don't spoil the ending, but run through basically the major bosses, the major mechanics, and tell you all about the game before the game comes out, typically in the line of helping consumers make informed decisions about whether or not they want to spend their coin on those games. And for many reviewers, that is the way that they go about doing the reviews. This is my reaction and my experience playing this game. If these things are important to you and these things are not important to you, or these things are things that, you know, make you crazy about a game, know that they exist before you decide to make your purchase. Which in and of itself is not a bad thing to have, right? Like, think about how many things that you wouldn't have bought if you had seen a review that let you know that, ooh, this is not that, before you bought it. And I'm not talking about just in video games, but I mean, like, Amazon. Like, I use Amazon reviews because people are brutally honest in those things sometimes, and I'll find out before I go and buy something that, ooh, didn't really work the way I expected it to, because I expected it to do this and it doesn't do that. And that's good knowledge to have before you put down coin on
that's right, especially if your money is not that, you know, easily come by. You got to scrape by every once in a while.
You want to know that you're going to get the right bang for your buck, okay?
Right.
So I think that that absolutely holds true in video games. But Bethesda's policy is that they are no longer going to, and this started with Fallout 4. Okay, remember the whole hubbub of, like, you know, game reviewers going, shit, like, we're used to getting this game, like, 2 weeks before it comes out to give us enough time to play through it and write a decent review before it comes out and tell people, and they didn't see the game until 24 hours before it was available for everybody. So basically, you had a bunch of games press journalists, like, cramming overnight to play the game to try and be first and get the reviews out there. This is now Bethesda's official policy. They released a statement saying, I'm paraphrasing here, but basically the whole point of why they create games is for people to enjoy games. And they understand that some people do use gaming site reviews as part of their purchase process, and they say that you should continue to do that. But what they are not going to do is they are not going to seed this press, any press outlet, with copies of the game 2 weeks early, or even more than 24 hours early before it releases to everyone, because they think it's only fair that everybody experience the game at the same time. Personally, I believe it's so that you don't end up in the situations where the entirety of the story and the bosses and the journeys that you're going to go on in the game, you know all about before you even see it. You know, because Game Press gets the game that far in advance, they're able to do game captures, and so the bosses are revealed, and it does take something away from the experience when you know what's coming.
Right.
You know what I mean? So there's
have they seen any type of loss in their revenues?
No. They have not. I mean, look at Doom, okay? Like, Doom went the same way. They did not seed early copies of Doom. Doom did really well because it's a really good game. If you like Doom. The new Doom is fucking
Doom.
Awesome. I am not a big fan of rail shooters, so I appreciate
not for you.
Doom for what it is, and it is a gorgeous looking game, and like, I enjoy watching other people play it. I don't enjoy playing it. Okay? And so I did not pre-order Doom. I did not buy Doom. I will not buy Doom. I did pre-order Dishonored 2. I'm going to play the shit out of Dishonored 2. Okay, and I'm going to play on a copy that I bought. But there was some fallout. Like, there were a bunch of editors, journalists, and even press sites who basically, and this is my opinion, threw a tantrum about Bethesda's policy. Personally, I think it is absolutely the policy to have. And I hope, actually, that more games press has to experience this. And that more outlets take this kind of tack. Because if you look at the scope of, like, the lead video game press site.
Right.
Your IGNs, your Kotakus, your Destructoids, your Polygons. If you look at those guys. Primarily, their reviews, while having a lot of technical detail many times about the games, ultimately end up very snarky.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And don't actually help, at least me, make a purchasing decision. They usually always focus on, does it have microtransactions? Yes, it does. So that's fucking bullshit, because that should have been stuff that was in the game. Does it have DLC planned? Of course. So you know what that means? They took shit out of the game, and now they're going to make you pay extra for it to get it down the road. Like, if you look at many of their reviews, it seems like they tend to harp on those things every time in a game. And so it's become cookie cutter. And it's no longer about what's the story, what's the journey, what's the character experience. Now it's what's the frame rate.
This, and this. You're going to pay this. This is what they took out because they have this set up. So don't waste your money.
Exactly. What's the frame rate? You know, how long is the gameplay? Can you get through it in under 10 hours? Oh, you can? Well, that's some bullshit. And you're paying $60 for it. And then they got season pass stuff. And the season pass stuff, well, we haven't experienced it yet, but you gotta pay for it if you want to get it. So, you know, they're just nickel and diming. Like, which is why I don't look at those sites anymore.
I don't know why people so harshly criticize. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, it takes quite a bit for me to jump on a season's pass for a game. But if I've bought the game and I've already spent like 3 weeks every day coming home playing at least 4 hours of the game, like sometimes even sacrificing the fact that I need to be up and alert at my job and fucking it anyway, like clearly my experience overweighs my sense of
responsibility.
Yeah. Like, in those cases, I will totally pony up because I'm already invested.
Right.
But, I mean, I don't know why our group, our demographic, we're so jaded and we're so nitpicky about that stuff.
Well, I don't know.
No, I mean, I kind of look at it like this. And, I mean, this is a very, you know, I don't want to say, it's a very cis feminine thing I'm about to say. But like when you get a new game, in my mind, it's kind of like a base outfit. Like it has all the things that you need. It's got shirt, it's got pants, it's got socks.
You know.
Like it's the base outfit. Like you could walk outside in it and not be completely cold, though you might get sick depending on the weather. And then like right. The seasons pass and all the micro are all like accessories. You don't have to buy into them. Your core experience, you're wearing it already. Now if you want a scarf and like a hat and this one time you like decided you wanted to climb and you wanted some gloves, well okay, the micro, like these are all piecemeal things to add to your already base experience,
right?
So the fact that a game has these things should not be shunned down on, because every once in a while I like to change up what I wear,
right? And here's the thing, that is a very girly analogy, but it works very well because it's true. No, it's true. Okay, your base outfit covers the basics, okay? You won't get cited for indecent exposure if you go out in the world in your base outfit. But sometimes you might want to jazz it up, and it's worth it to you because you like that base outfit so much. Like, it becomes one of your favorites in your heavy rotation that you want to invest a little bit more in it. So you want to get some accessories.
And you want a jazzy, like, headpiece or, like, I hate to use the analogy, but like you said, it does make some good point. But, like, you don't see people walking into, like, Neiman Marcus and going, you know what? I spent $60 on this blouse and, like, I don't want to buy your, like bitching about the fact that you could have a scarf in it. It costs more.
I'm paying $65 for this blouse. You should just give me the scarf to go with it.
Right, exactly.
Because you and I both know that scarf goes with it. And as a retailer, you're like, yes, that's why I'm charging you for the scarf. Because you and I both know the scarf goes with it. So pay me for the scarf.
Like, they're like, hey, I did some research and I found the original concept for this outfit. And it was attached to the blouse. You detached it from the blouse. I want my money's worth for the blouse. Give me the fucking scarf. Like, that's what it kind of sounds like to me. Yes. Maybe it's just...
No, that's it. It, you beautiful savant, you. But that is it. And you know, it just... there are so many sites that when I look at their reviews, that's what they all boil down to me. And that's not useful to me. Because that's not how I
let's be real about it. Because, I mean, being technical... you know, like, if you're a technical junk, like, you love your sound. Like, you are a sound scientist.
I am an audiophile.
If something doesn't sound right, if something does not sound right, or if it's tweaked even a little bit, you're like, something's not right. Like, your senses scare me sometimes.
I like to play with the 30 so, like, band EQ. So what?
So I'm just saying.
Is not enough. 10 bands
you,
is just not enough.
But you're... that's your interest. So, of course, when you walk into a tech store looking for a new system, like, you've got specifics in mind. You want it to have this type of, like, bass or treble. You want it to have this much surround sound. You want to be able to do, like, whatever the sound techno garble is for it. So, I mean, with that in mind, for your specificity, okay, you definitely want to go in and know that, oh, I saw that someone said that this had this, all the things that I want. Because I'm a file about it, and I want these things. Okay, it's good to know that this has the thing. So, I mean, for those minded people, those type of reviews are not necessarily bad. You know, but at the same time, like you said, like, you're kind of playing in a black and white scenario and a colored... that sounds so racist. And a colored scenario. And I don't mean it the way that it sounds. But, like, you either have the legit A, B, C, D, E, F, G, or you have the... it made me feel this. You're going to enjoy this aspect. You're going from a I think to a I feel, which are two different mindsets.
And that's the main reason why we approach reviews a bit differently on our site, and we always have. And it's, you know, our team, and I'm not saying that our team is better than any other team that's out there or anything, but we try to really deliver reviews as this is our experience, and if you tend to like the type of things that I like in games, then you'll like this game for this reason. And if you don't, then, you know, hey, you've got
the maybe you'll find something else about it that you may enjoy that I didn't look at.
So we don't spend a lot of time on frame rate, because I don't care about frame rate. Like, frame rate really, for the most part, doesn't affect me in games that I'm playing on my console. I do think that frame rate is very important in PC gaming. But really, for me, there are very few games where I have felt the frame rate difference or seen it, and it has impeded my gameplay. And that's really the only time that I think frame rate matters, is if your frame rate is so low that things are clunky and junky, and as such, you know, you're missing jumps or missing the timing because of it, then frame rate is an issue and is something that should be talked about. Otherwise, let's be real, 10 out of 10 games on the consoles currently look bananas amazing. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's a, you know, 720p or 1080p, as long as it looks great and runs great, okay? Now, if you have a 4K TV or better, then yeah, you may want to, and those things are going to be a little bit more important to you because, again, you'll see it reflected on your TV when you plug in a game and it doesn't meet those specs. But for most people, most consumers, that's not a big deal. For me, what makes me want to get a game, in all honesty, is, does it look like it's going to be a good story and a good experience? And if the answer is yes, I'm going to get the game. And that's and whether or not I pre-order it really and truly now is driven by three things. Is there a pre-order bonus that is going to be meaningful to me? Okay. I work a 70-hour week. I don't really want to, but I do. Okay.
Life is life, bro.
Okay. And so beneficial pre-order bonuses for me are things that let me jump into the game and have a little bit of a head start, if you will, to really dive in and enjoy the game. So if there are microtransactions, if there are bonuses that give me some more powerful weapons at the start or some extra lives or extra credits or money to buy gear or elements that I need to advance my skills a little bit faster, that's beneficial to me because that means I'm going to actually be able to get further in the game faster, which is important because I have less time each week to play games, okay? That is a beneficial pre-order bonus to me. I will make a pre-order if I'm interested in the game if it has that kind of bonus for me because that's valuable for me because of the time that I have to play games, okay? 10 years ago, not the case. Wouldn't have been the definitive thing that's like, oh, yeah, shit, you can do that. Like, I love the fact that I jumped off with a bunch of basically blister packs and gears because it let me unlock a bunch of weapons when I was, and they're all blind packs, kind of like Overwatch loot crates. You know, you don't know what to do until you open one, but it gave me some extra ammunition. So I started the game with extra bullets in my gun whenever I picked up an ammo pack than what I normally would, which was hugely helpful for me getting through some of those earlier missions, you know. So, and there are other things, you know, whether or not, depending upon what my budget is, if there's a collector's edition that has, you know, items in the collector's edition that I'm actually interested in. Because I don't really go down the path of wanting to purchase a game unless I'm interested in the game. And what interests me in the game isn't early reviews. And it's not previews, even ones that I write, to be completely 100% honest. What makes me interested in a game is what I learn about it when it's announced. The teaser trailer, the sizzle reel, and then typically what I infer from reading about the game in its immediate press release. That's when I make my first snap decision on a game. I pre-ordered Dishonored 2. As I was watching Bethesda's live stream. Okay.
Oh, I know. You're like, order.
And we know, I did not finish the first Dishonored game. I found it to get to a point where it became, for me, more cumbersome to plot out the right way for the way that I was playing to get to a boss.
Right. I remember how upset you were like, not at the game, but just at the level where you, I think you were just mentally exhausted about trying to plot this out.
Yeah, I was.
And it was your resolve was just gone.
It was gone. It was gone, and I had to walk away from it. And so I ended up playing other games. But that didn't take away from, I had enjoyed the experience with Dishonored up to that. I thought it was a great story. I loved, you know, the way that the environments were set up, and I thought that it was a great game, and it is one of the few games that I'm still disappointed in myself for not completing, because I feel like I really would have enjoyed it completing it.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Obviously, this newer story is playing off of the events that happened in one, so maybe you'll get exposure to the back end of the story that you didn't complete.
Right, and you know, I went back on YouTube and I watched the endings, and you know, so I've gotten the story, but I myself didn't experience it firsthand. So it's one of those things where, like, as a gamer, I'm disappointed in myself that I didn't, like, just push through, that I didn't get my resolve back and, like, finish that game, because it's one of the games that I do think, you know, that I wish that I had finished. But what a lot of journalist press and traditional press, their reaction to this was, you know, this is just Bethesda trying to protect themselves, and more game developers want to protect their pre-orders because we're all telling people not to pre-order anymore, and, you know, this is just a way for them to control, you know, bad press, because, you know, we're letting people know that games are bad before they come out so that they don't waste their money. And I'm just like, you guys are not the beacons of honesty here in the world.
Right, some of you bitches are jaded. Because maybe this is your first encounter with getting one, and it's not the best thing.
And now you're basically, instead of being this upper echelon of, yeah, I get to play games before they come out, and, you know, people listen to my every word and make their purchasing decisions based on me. No, because even in their statement, Bethesda said, you know, if you use reviews for games to make your purchasing decisions, continue to do so. You're just going to have to wait for those reviews to come, because they're going to come after the game launches.
At the same time that you could walk into the GameStop and buy it yourself and find out.
So you're just going to have to, you know, wait a week or so after the game comes out for those reviews to surface. And you can still read them and make your purchasing decisions. You just won't be making them on day one. That's completely okay with us.
See, and that's what our jaded group is pissed about. Exactly. They want their immediacy, and they're taking it away.
They want to be first to market. And now, for Bethesda games, they're not. Their videos are going to come out at the same time as your normal YouTubers are going to come out with their videos at the same space. So they're not going to beat the PewDiePies of the world to YouTube with gameplay of the game and the first levels. And they're going to not have a walkthrough ready and online at midnight, day of launch. They're going to be downloading the game just like we're going to be downloading the game. So I give Bethesda kudos for really leveling the playing field, because it allows...
I like their steps. Like, this is a bold move to make.
It does sour
a lot of people, but obviously those diehard earnest fans and enthusiast press...
It just levels the playing field. I'm not even worried about them throwing salt on the jaded people's game, because I'm not about that life. But what I am about is everything being equal, okay? What this means is, for Bethesda games, technically, we have the same window as Polygon has for getting first thought and reviews done on the game, because they're going to get it the same time we're going to get it. And so if we marathon through an overnight play, just like they're going to have to, we can hit the web at the same time with our review. As opposed to, you know, we haven't done big reviews of AAA games because, for the most part, we don't get them as early as the other guys.
Right. We usually get them a week or so after.
We usually get them a week or so after. And so the game's already known by then, which is why we tend to do editorials about them, because you already know.
Right.
IGN, Kotaku, Destructoid, Cheap Ass Gamer, I mean, you name an outlet, Shaq News, like, they've already run through the entire game. There's like 4 different community walkthroughs of the game in addition to IGN's core one. Even CNET has fucking reviews up, you know, so we don't do that. We do our editorial. Like, this is our way of playing the game. And we're going to continue to do that. But I just think this is a great way to level the playing field so that YouTubers, because let's face it, there's a whole lot of YouTubers that they're making their careers out of doing Let's Plays and walkthroughs and things like that. This now levels the playing field for them so that they are also not behind, you know, the reviews. So I hope that more developers do this. I think that it's the right way to go. We should experience the journey at the same time when a game comes out, not beforehand. You know, I think that, you know, you get a taste of gameplay and levels at trade shows so you can talk about what you've seen and what's developed since the last time you were able to touch it.
You can kind of anticipate and open up discussion for what's actually going to happen.
And then
it's far more enjoyable that way.
Exactly. And to me, that just speaks volumes to being focused on the player and not the business. So big ups to Bethesda for it. I'm completely 110% behind you guys on the policy. It's the right step to do. And frankly, I hope that more developers do the same thing. Level the playing field across the board for everyone. And then that way people can really make informed decisions because they are reading reviews at the same time from a whole host of different voices and not just whoever got there first.
Kudos.
Got there early. So golf clap, Bethesda. Golf clap. So that's one. Two, really quickly, because I'm not going to get into too many details. Both Microsoft and Apple made announcements this week about new hardware that's coming out.
Oh?
Yep. So Apple updated their MacBook line. There's also some software updates and Apple TV, kind of cool. But they have refreshed the MacBook line. They have created a basically mini Retina display. They replaced the function key row with a touch-sensitive OLED. They call it the Touch Bar. And basically, it is a context-aware bar based off of what app you're running. So if you're in Photoshop, you can customize that Touch Bar with tools that you use regularly. If you want to get the function keys back, you can hold down the function button and the keys pop back. And function is normal function keys, but it is a complete display. So not only buttons, but various tools. So you can have a touch sensitive color selector and it supports multi-touch gestures. So you can do things with both your left and your right hand on the bar. So, you know, as an example, you can zoom and select a color in Photoshop and then move around the display and work on your layer, which is pretty cool. They showed off a demo of Algorithm's GJ application using the Touch Bar where you can, with, you know, both hands, mix directly on the laptop. So, you know, there's a lot of things going on there. They took out all the USB ports, the USB 3, and they've moved to the lightning ports, the USB 3 ports. So like they did on the MacBook, and there are four of those on the machine. So one that you can dedicate to charging, and then other ones that you can hook up multi-devices, including displays. They worked with LG and showed off their new MacBook actually running two 5K displays from LG using the ports, and then also having a massive RAID connection connected and it all running it seamlessly. So it's, you know, a really fast connector. But as always, just like with people, when they removed the headphone jack from the phone, everybody was like, what the fuck, guys? You got rid of my USB. Now I gotta get an adapter. Dongles everywhere. Like, everybody's moving. Everybody is moving to USB-C. Razer's new Blade Pro has USB-C ports on it because it's just faster than USB 3, and it allows you to send more data across, and you can send power through it. So it's a multi-purpose port. Like, it allows you to then make a thinner machine because you don't have to have this big, robust fucking card in there. Like, get over it. We adapt. New technology comes out. And yes, if you want to be on the bleeding edge, you're going to have to get adapters and shit, and it's going to hurt. A year from now, every laptop on the fucking planet is going to have this USB protocol on it. It's just like when we went from cassette to CD, where everyone's like, oh my god, now I gotta rebuy all my music. Like, get the fuck over it. Technology moves forward. Stop your bitching first world problems. But Microsoft made an announcement and announced a new desktop, the Surface Pro. It is a 28-inch touchscreen machine. Its core brains look to be in a box very similar in size to the Mac Mini. Display is adjustable because it's touch sensitive, so you can actually put it down at an angle, almost like a tablet, and work with it in tablet mode. And they even created a device that it looks like a puck that you actually place upon the monitor, and it is a dial that you can use for menu access and controls. So you can multi-gesture that way as well on the device. And so, you know, they showed off bringing up again, a color wheel and something like a Photoshop application to, as you are drawing in real time, change the color spectrum. And so it looks to be a very interesting setup. And there are a lot of people on the web who were like, holy shit, Microsoft just out-Appled Apple, because the Apple announcement was very straightforward. You know, the new MacBooks are thinner. The MacBook Pros, I should say, they're very much like the new MacBook. They are thinner. The 15-inch is now a four-pound machine. Like, they're crazy light. They all have Retina displays. Both the 13-inch and the 15-inch model with a touch bar, and then a 13-inch model without one. You know, they have, even though they're still selling the MacBook Air, they have effectively killed it, because now it's just all MacBook. You either get the 12-inch MacBook with its one USB-C port and headphone jack, which I've had mine now for a year, or you can step up and get more power, because they have, you know, ridiculous RAM. I think the only exception that I have on the MacBook side is that the 15-inch taps out at like 16 gigs RAM, and that just is not enough to me. Like, if you have that kind of screen space and you have that kind of power in the machine, because the processors are very high in them, and you can kit them out with pretty good size solid state drives as well, that I would want a machine that I could take probably up to at least 24 gigs, and you can't. They tap out at 16. So for me, I think it kind of makes doing video production for any videos that are going to end up being longer than like 2 minutes, still something that you would do on a desktop versus a laptop. Pretty damn powerful nonetheless, especially if, you know, you're into photography or into music making. They would be great machines. I don't know that Microsoft out-Appled Apple. I just think that they're two different approaches to the same thing, right? Like, they both went, okay, multi-gesture, multi-touch are what consumers probably are going to want, because the more that you can make tactile your creation, the better. And the Surface Pro desktop is definitely something I can see anybody who is the type of person that has a drafting table or they use that as part of their work would love that machine if they're okay with Windows 10. Because Windows 10 has some issues.
It absolutely does. You're 100% right on that.
And it's not a cheap machine either. You know, they start at $3,000, but they go up to, you know, kitted out, $4,100. So it's in the same, you know, market price as a kitted out, beyond belief, iMac. But the iMac doesn't have the touch-sensitive screen. You know, so I definitely think that the Surface Pro is innovative as far as what we know Microsoft to come to market with historically. And I think that's what surprised people so much, is that this week Apple refreshed their laptop line. Okay, they didn't touch the iMacs. They refreshed their laptop line. And they put in something a little new and a little different that will probably change their entire line of products over the next couple of years. Okay, because I can't imagine that people aren't going to love that touch bar thing in their Mac, and they're going to be like, yo, you need to bring that to, like, just a regular keyboard so I can use it with my iMac. Like, that's probably in the works and is going to happen really soon. And people are going to have a rush on keyboards. And I can't wait for that. But at the same time, I think that if you're in the Windows world, the Surface Pro desktop, if you're in the market for a desktop and you're wanting a machine that runs Windows 10, and you look at the demo videos, it is an impressive-looking machine. Like, you would expect that there'd be an Apple logo on the back. I mean, because the way that they even shot the commercial, it's like they're working with one of Apple's old advertising agencies. It looks very Apple-like. And we just don't expect that from Microsoft, because that hasn't been our experience with Microsoft up until Satya Nadella. So, you know, I'm not in a Mac or a PC war. I know that there are some people that are still, like, bringing up those banners. But ultimately, what I say to people is, do your research and buy the machine that is best for you and does what you need it to do today and what you will need it to do tomorrow, you know, meaning 3 or 5 years down the road. And whether that's a Mac or a PC, that's up to you. But do your research and get the fit that's right for you. Period. End. Like, I'm not buying a laptop ever again. Like, I just I just don't see it, because I don't edit video like that on the go. You know, if we're editing video, it's quick interviews and things like that. It's not stuff that we've taped for hours. So I don't need a machine that can run Final Cut on the go. I have an iPad Pro. I have one of the large screen ones, and I have a keyboard for it. And between that and my camera, I can cover easily all the events that we do. I can do all of my article writing and my research because it's got Wi-Fi, and I have a full-on keyboard. I have an adapter that lets me bring in photos from my Nikon, and I have Photoshop on my iPad Pro so I can do my light retouching and my overlays to put our watermark and our logos on it. And if we do an audio interview, it has GarageBand on it, so I can cut it up really quickly, and I keep our intro and our outro on it. I have everything that I need to produce the type of content that I produce on the go on my tablet, which I've basically turned into a netbook. So I don't need...
Because you just that crafty, bro.
But I don't need much more power than that on the go. I originally bought my MacBook to do that. And then when Apple came out with the iPad Pro down the road from that, I was like, you know what? This would probably be a dope way to go, because typically when I travel for shows, I usually bring an iPad and I load it up with movies. So I have movies that I enjoy to watch on the plane. And then I have my MacBook actually in my bag so that when I'm on the show floor, you know, I'm carrying around this iPad. I'm carrying around this MacBook. I'm using the MacBook, the actual laptop, to do all my writing and stuff. I was like, I don't want to be carrying two devices all the time. You know, especially for the shows that we do, we walk around a lot. Like, that gets really heavy on the back.
We get all the fitness in that one day. Well, those 3 days.
So I tend to try to avoid that stuff. And so now having my iPad Pro that I have one device that I carry. This is the device that I cover the show with, and my camera. And I'm almost to the point, I'm not yet ready to replace my DSLR for events like E3, but for the smaller events where I can get up close and personal very easily with things versus E3, I'm about to be able to cover those with just the camera that's on my smartphone. Because it's powerful enough to do that, which means I'm now going to be running around a show floor with a much lighter bag, and plenty of room for swag.
Considerably lighter.
Because it's just going to be my phone, which I don't really carry in my bag. It's usually in a holster underneath my armpit, and my iPad Pro. So technology changes, things change. Fucking
people
accept
change.
Them. If you're in the market changes for a that. Machine, do your research and buy the one that's right for you. Period. End. But, like, let's get over the bullshit. And you know, I had someone ask me when we were talking about it, you know, if I was interested in the Surface Pro. And I went, if I wasn't a Mac house to begin with, if I was doing engineering or a lot of, you know, computer-aided design work, or if I could sketch, because I can't. I don't have that fine motor control in my hand. I would be very interested in that display that is part of the Surface Pro desktop. You look at the video, you look at the commercial, the trailer, whatever you want to call it. The demonstrations that they show all look fantastic and they're very interesting. But at the end of the day, I am not a Surface girl, whether it's desktop or a tablet. I've tried them. I have not had a great experience with them for the things that I do. You know, it runs Office just fine, but I don't live in Office. I do a lot of social work. I do a lot of very specific things in Photoshop. And because I have, and again, this is me saying this is my experience, because I have spent so much time in the Mac operating system now, because I started out on PC, I am more comfortable and it is easier and faster for me to get around in the Mac operating system. And so every time I work on a PC and every time I work on a Surface device, there is the learning curve of negotiating my keyboard shortcuts and where things are and what menus and why they should be in those menus, and a change in my thought that slows down my productivity. And yes, if I got rid of every Mac in my life, including my phone, and forced myself into a PC world, within 2 months, I would probably be in the exact same position that I am now with my productivity. But why would I do that? Because I'm not uprooting my whole life for one device. You know, this is my path and I enjoy it and it works for me and those kinds of things. So find your path, do your thing. But at the end of the day, I am not interested in a Surface tablet. I'm not interested in the Surface desktop. I have an iMac right now that is about 4 years old. Probably within the next 3 years, I'm going to be looking at replacing that machine. I will be replacing it with either a whatever the iMac of the day is, or at that point, probably a Mac Pro, because we're going to be going much more heavy into video editing moving forward. And I am a Final Cut editor. I prefer working in Final Cut to Premiere to edit video on the Mac. And Final Cut only exists on the Mac. So much like most killer apps, my platform is where the killer app for me is at, and that is on my Mac. So, you know, that's just me and the way that I look at things. And if I get, you know, 8 years out of a desktop, then I built that thing right from the get-go. That's what I got there. I know that you have some things that you want to share, Panda.
I do. I have some
coffee that I need to drink, so.
I have some rantlets. I have some newslets. I have some.
You got some little lets.
I have some lets this week. So first things first. So, but PAX East, they finally released their dates a little bit ago. And I didn't talk about this when
finally,
it first came
it was
out.
Early.
Because,
well, they did it early this year.
They did. Here's the thing that I like about it. So one, the dates. March 10th to the 12th, 2017. So no longer do you have to feel conflicted about going to Easter or Passover. Like, no more, oh God, I'm going to hell because I decided to go to PAX East instead of
church.
That's right.
Service.
They
pick it.
They finally did it right. And they were like, let's just get out of the month that has some shit going on. Smart idea. And it's right before St. Patty's Day.
Yeah, so you won't have to deal with drunken Bostonians.
Well, I mean,
you won't have to deal with a higher level of drunken Bostonians.
You'll just drunken nerds.
Right, you'll just have the normal level of drunken nerdery as opposed to the expedited level of drunken...
You'll get some drunken fights over Settlers of Catan at the tabletop.
Someone being like, hey, Kate, kiss me, I'm Irish. And you're like, no, you're not. Like, come on, dude. You're a Korean.
Yeah, so,
like, what's
so
up?
First things first, kudos to their placement in terms of date.
Yeah, good.
Here's something I'm not too happy about. Now, granted, us as media don't often have to run into this issue, but we do have friends who are not. So PAX East has always kind of been... And I don't know if this happens at West or South or Australia.
Yes, it happens at all of them. Okay, everybody wants to go to PAX.
Right. No. I know that the events happen, but the people who run when registration opens up, like, they're kind of shady about it. You know, they know everyone's waiting, and, like, they're being hounded on Twitter. They're being, like, hated on Facebook. Like, don't drop a PAX East email address because that box would be full. Like, done deal. So they're always kind of very discreet about when their registration is open. Now, a few years ago, they did it like 1 o'clock one day, which, you know, people who got jobs, they be working. And people who don't got jobs, they got money to buy the passes anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people have developed these elite chains of, all right, who's not working this day in case it goes off so that people can go and.
But that's like, how most people attack buying concert tickets and. You know,
I don't know, bro. The few concerts that I've gone to, like, I'm like, I already knew ahead of time, bought my ticket, I'm done. I'm not like, yo, bro, I gotta work.
Hold up. It depends on where you try to go. Because, like, if you're trying to get Beyonce tickets, like, I know people who are like, okay, who is off this day because you are going to be watching? Like, I signed up for the Insiders Club, so we're going to get the link, like, 45 minutes before everybody else does because we got to beat the StubHub people out. Like, but really and truly... For, like, stuff that people want to go to, like, a lot. Like, there's a big audience.
So they have these elites.
It's not even elite. It's just that they create a system to ensure that they're able to get tickets for their groups. Because, like, it's hard to get groups of things together at places. Like, if you're trying to get concert tickets, trying to get four seats or more together in some place where you're not in the nosebleeds and you would have been just better off waiting for the damn concert to go to HBO and just have everybody over to your house to watch it.
On your beautiful TV and your comfortable
exactly.
couch.
Exactly. Like, you need to have a system. Okay? And it's just like, and I hate to burst your bubble here, but, like, every PAX, there's a system. Because the people who are in the forums... If you're part of the forums, you learn earlier than the rest of us when tickets are going on sale. So the easiest way to fight the people who are somewhat quote-unquote shady is just join the fucking open forum, because that's where they put the information. Again, PAX was born out of people in the forums wanting to get together. So if you join the forums, you will know before they put it out on Twitter and any place else when the tickets are going on sale.
So anyway.
See what happened with this go-round.
So here's the thing. So they kind of snuck it, and they dropped registration for the passes, the badges, even before 1. Like, this was like 11:45 one morning, and people were not ready. They were not ready. She wasn't ready, and shit went crazy. Now, mind you, like I said, us as media, like, I don't tend to sweat it because, you know, I'm bomb. But, you know, my
and
friends
humble.
Are all like, oh.
So humble.
And humble brag. So fresh and so clean. Popping my collar. Whatever. But, I mean, like, we've got some good friends like KBD who will be on the watch and, like, will procure some badges for friends. Like doing it right. And several of my friends had, like, these elite web chains of, okay, I've got this much money. I can buy these many passes. I'm going to get 3-day passes and go. And literally, all the 3-day passes have sold out currently. All the Saturdays are sold out. There's very low badge availability for Friday. Sunday seems to be, like, good. Like, no one wants to go on Sunday. Fuck Sunday. Which is kind of, you know, funny. Because most times, all the badges get sold out, and then that's it. So now that when I look at the site and I see that there's still availability on the Friday and the Sunday, it makes me think, has the shiny stuff off of PAX East, like, kind of, is it kind of waning now? Because usually it's all across the board, you can't get in. And now, like, you clearly see that the interest has kind of shifted some, which is kind of interesting to me personally. So if you're still trying to figure out what your PAX plans are, if you wanted to have PAX plans, you can still have PAX plans, is what I'm trying to tell you. Just be it on the Friday, which, I mean, that's the high day. Friday, Saturday are kind of your win. Like, you really kind of want to get in those 2 days, because that's where, like, if there's going to be announcements, they're going to be made on the Friday. You know, that's the media day, for one, is the Friday. Like, you want to get all the big things done on your Friday. But you could still go. I mean, Sunday, it might be a little bit more lax, but you could still play a heck of a whole lot of tabletop. There's still stuff to do.
Like, here's the thing I'm going to caution everybody on, okay? Because this happens every year in every con. You know, it's one of the reasons why Comic-Con New York cracked down on its enthusiast access, you know, the people being able to buy tickets as fans and press coming into the event. PAX is huge. Like, every PAX is huge.
I mean, last year I took a picture that I spent $7 on a hot dog. Granted, it was a big hot dog, but still.
Okay. You always have to get the fucking hot dog in.
I'm sorry. It is ridiculous. It is a hot dog. It is all the undesirable parts of a pig put in a casing that I still put in my mouth.
Then you need to change your life and start getting beef kosher dogs. PAX East is huge. PAX West is huge. PAX South continues to grow and is going to be even bigger next year than it was this year. And fucking Australia is bananas, okay?
I mean, it's Australia, so if you're already there, you already won.
The nerddom is large, okay? There are shit tons of people that want to go to these events, okay? Period end, there's always going to be a struggle for getting passes for all of the days to go. If you want to know when tickets are going on sale, join the forums for the event and follow them and learn when the tickets are going on sale. And be prepared to buy those tickets then. And if you can't, because you can't get to the web or things like that, work it out with a friend to do it, okay? Because that's what happened to me. I was sitting at work, and I got a message on Slack from our homie KBD going, holy shit, PAX tickets are up. And the big reason that he was on it was because of hotel, because that usually means that their block for hotels with at least the slight discount available are live. And sure enough, they were. And the reservation system that they had in place this year was much better than it was last year. And so he was looking at rooms and was like, I'm on rooms right now because we got to get this worked out. Because, you know, even though we live in Boston, it is very difficult, as we have learned.
Yep. I learned last year commuting from my house into Boston
with
is
gear.
No joke.
It's no joke. And it's
like,
difficult.
You might as well just get a hotel room and live in Boston for the weekend.
Exactly. Just between carting gear and stuff and then having a place to put stuff. down when you want to go to party. Like, I did not enjoy having to bring all of my fucking gear with me to every after party and event that we wanted to go to, because I had to constantly keep my eye on my bag because, you know, I have $5,000 worth of electronics in that bag and nobody was getting away with it. And then get home to then turn around and get back up to then get into town. Like, it makes more sense, even though we're literally 25 and 35 minutes outside of the city, to actually stay in the city. So he was on point to get the room and got it. And, like, literally ran home from work to make sure he could manage it. And then once it was done, I was like, all right, great. Now I need a nap because I'm fucking exhausted. Like, if that's what you want to do, if that's an event you want to go to, like, you have to put in that effort. It's just like, you know, trying to get tickets to go to Comic-Con and things like that. You know, we don't get into Comic-Con because we don't cover comics like that.
Right.
As press. So if we want to go to a Comic-Con, we got to buy tickets, which means we got to have a system. And one thing I will caution everyone is that even with the systems that PAX has put in place, there are still people that scam tickets. So I expect that a lot of those 3-day passes that were sold are going to end up on places still like StubHub and people like trying to scalp things. And the PAX group really does try to do a good job of catching those people that are scamming tickets and then taking those tickets back and reissuing. So that's not to say that there are a whole lot of 3-day passes that are going to come back out. But I would expect that, you know, if you want a 3-day pass, you can really do it. But really the best experience that you will have at a PAX event is really the first 2 days. So
yeah.
if you haven't got tickets yet, like, and you can get in on the Friday, like, get in on the Friday, because that to me, Friday is the better day to go, just because you don't have as many families coming in and things like that. So it's a little bit more adultish crowd, I would say.
Right.
On Friday. So there's not as long of lines to get in on things. It's a little bit easier to get food all over the place and actually be able to sit down someplace to eat it. So, like, Friday is, for me, is like my favorite me day. It's like be a fan and go around and do stuff.
Right. Yes.
And then, because Saturday is my work day, because you have a massive chunk of cosplayers that come in. You've got families that come in, so it's really cool to watch, you know, dads play games with their daughters and families that do cosplay and stuff like that. But the lines are exponentially longer because you have way more people. The noise level goes up for me. Like, there's a lot more going on, and so Saturday is much more of a sensory overload day. And Sunday, then, I agree, it chills back out. And so, like, to enjoy it, Friday and Sunday are my favorite days. So if you haven't got tickets yet, the fact that Saturday is sold out, not a bad thing. Just get on the tickets now for whatever day you can get into town.
So just a little update on that. There's still a chance.
You got a shot. Don't waste your time.
Don't turn in your chip just yet. Don't kick the dog just yet.
Don't kick the dog ever.
Ever. That instantly makes you the bad guy. It's the word bad trope. Bad trope. Since we were talking a little bit about social media earlier in the show, I thought that would have been the best time to bring this up, but it's okay. So Twitter, which I have one, I hardly use it, but I have one. A while ago, bought Vine, which is the 6-second video that so many young people have used to pay their rent.
Twitter bought Vine? I thought Twitter invented Vine.
I thought they bought it. Anyway, they own Vine. Whatever.
Oh.
And Twitter has decided to shut that shit down. Bye bye Vine. Like, bye bye. Yeah, and Vine. this caused a very big stir in the internet universe, because so many young kids have been able to establish careers, quotes there, because, you know, anyway. I'm just mad because I didn't become a Vine star when I was able to be one.
Yeah, but Twitter, by the way, just because I had to look it up, Twitter founded Vine, so they created.
Okay, they created Vine, and now they're taking it away. And a lot of people, there's been a big surge on YouTube lately of a lot of Viners who had a big establishment on Vine moving into the medium. Because it just seems like the proper course of action. Like, move your 6 seconds to, like, a minute if you can do it, if the format's strong enough. and, you know, and make that jump. But I think now with Vine shutting down, there goes all of those careers that were established via Vine, all those young kids who have managed to find a way to be productive and live these lives, like these lavisher lives than they would have normally.
Also, I take that back. They bought it for $30 million. Fucking internet.
Okay.
That's why you always have to go to the source.
See, I thought they bought
it. And not the wiki.
I thought they bought it. But anyway.
They did for $30 million right before they went public.
So there's the thing. So there goes all the livelihood of all these young kids who now have to understand what a real job is.
Whoa.
I'm just hating a little bit.
You just throwing salt on people making money off of Vine. That's not cool, man. Just because you didn't come up with a series, like, don't be hating.
I couldn't master 6 seconds. So a lot of Viners, you know, are going to YouTube and complaining, and obviously, because there goes their livelihoods. But I think a lot of people aren't really paying attention to the fact that, okay, yeah, so there's a lot of Viners who are about to lose their job. Because, granted, old existing Vine stuff is still going to be accessible, just no more new Viners can come on board.
Right.
Like, that's it.
And the archives are going to be left up for a bit so people can pull their content down.
So, I mean, talk about being very nice. But I also think that people are not, like, all the Viners who are complaining, like, no one is talking about the actual people who worked at Vine. Like, they're the ones that really kind of, like, everyone's losing here. But I feel like the actual workers at Vine, like, no one's like, man, I feel bad for those Vine workers. Like, whenever a game company goes down, you're like, oh, man, I hope those developers get back on their feet. Like, they're very supportive. But no one is saying anything about these Vine people. And it's like, it's pretty kind of bumming, you know, because these are people who, you know, are the tech people, are the IT people who, you know, who make Vine, though questionable and sometimes a little shady, make it work and have made all these other careers existent. And no one's saying anything. So I kind of felt bad about that. So I kind of want to bring that up because, like, I want to pour one out to the internal Viner, you know, job group who is totally getting the shaft here. I hope Twitter finds something for you to do, picks you up and, you know, redirects you into something positive because no one likes losing their job.
Okay.
So
I agree with you. You know, a lot of people in the notice of Vine shutting down focused on the people.
Oh, no. Where am I going to get my Watermelon Guy Vine every week? Where am I going to get my compilations at?
Here's the thing. Like, didn't even focus on that. Just focused on, wow, like, Twitter is just hemorrhaging money. And, like, they don't know who they are, you know, because Salesforce is no longer interested in acquiring them, so no big company wants to buy them. So, you know, they're kind of in this tizzy tailspin thing, and here's this one thing that they had that they acquired for, you know, relatively a low cost that was producing something, but yet, again, Twitter itself had not figured out how to monetize. And so while the people who were creating content on the platform had figured out a way to make a career out of doing what they were doing, you know, they weren't making the money on Vine. Okay, the people who were successful at turning Vine into a business platform for them were able to get known because of Vine and were creating video content in other ways and other places, or turned that notoriety into their ability to do other things. Like King Botch, like, you don't make money off of posting a Vine to Vine. Okay. King Batch got known on Vine and became a personality, and so then turned that into a business and, you know, became a person that you had to, unless he just liked working with you, if you wanted him to appear on your thing, you had to pay him for it. You know, he's an actor. And you know, you have, what's his face? Logan does the dab videos now, but, you know, was a prankster at the beginning. You know, going to the Olympics and doing videos for NBC Universal. Like, Vine didn't make them money. Vine gave them a platform to be found to show off their creativity and then market themselves in other places. You know, they were able to then take their creations to YouTube, where they could monetize their videos and then become YouTube Red creators and, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, I feel like you, bad for the people who are going to be out of work because there isn't a place for them to return to within Twitter because they weren't part of Twitter to begin with. And because Twitter itself is not shortening back its video span to 6 seconds, you know, putting that shit out on Twitter instead of having a full app where you could create that stuff isn't going to work. And there are some people that, you know, weren't able to monetize and weren't able to turn themselves into anything other than a presence on the platform because, you know, the app itself let you record, edit, stitch together. Like, those people don't necessarily know how to work a non-linear editor outside of their phone. So they're not going to be able to turn to their computer and take their content to the web as easily as they were doing things, you know, on Vine. You know, there are some people that don't have more than a 6 second video in them, and a 6 second video doesn't really work and live on YouTube either. You know, so there are a lot.
The only way it actually really does is in those is in a compilation, which it's multiple Vines that meet that 15 minute right, or whatever.
Now that platform for recording those types of videos and putting them together is going to be gone, and so, you know, there's a bunch of content creators that are not going to be able to be content creators anymore. And I'm sad about that. But let's be honest, 1 out of 1,000 Vines was really, truly funny and great. 2 out of 2,000 content creators was creating what I would consider to be like seasonal or regular show content. You know what I mean? Like, you know, for every King Batch and for every, what's his name?
The guy who makes the watermelon right. Keep me afloat.
Like, you know, for every one of those, you have hundreds of thousands of people who are just like, these are my feet. I'm walking on my feet. You know, for every damn Daniel, you got...
Daniel.
Right, right. But for every damn Daniel, you got to get through like 60... I put in fake teeth and I just made a face. You know, like...
Right.
You know, so
I get it. So, I mean, there's a lot of
It's still sad because this is your generation's first thing that was created. That was
not my generation. Uh-huh. This is younger than me.
Nope. Sorry, millennial. This is your shit.
Then I'm glad someone's cleaning the shit up. Anyway, I feel bad. I feel bad for those people who worked at Vine who are losing their jobs. Like, yep. I said, no one is focusing on the fact that this staple that has been comfortable for a lot of people is now being pulled from underneath them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I wanted to acknowledge it because, you know, whenever, like I said, anything of a big nature shuts down, like, people are putting memes, like, there are candles, someone's singing Candle in the Wind by Elton John. Like, I will remember you as playing somewhere when someone's taking a dump, like, but no one's doing it. So I wanted to do it.
So make sure that you check out our podcast on pretty much every thing on the web that exists that you can get podcasts on. That includes iTunes, either on your desktop or through the podcast application on your iOS device. That includes Stitcher Radio, Google Play, VogNetwork.com, pretty much any podcast aggregator on the planet. Just search for the Eshcast Electric Sisterhood and subscribe. That will make sure that you get our podcast episodes the moment we put them out on the web for your fantastic consumption. You can also check out our news and reviews articles in Apple News if you have an iOS device. You can also check them out on our website, ElectricSisterhood.com. It's where all the goodness is at. Content from all of our writers and content creators, including our homeboy King Baby Duck, Hamsterman 2049, Byrick. I mean, we even got Billy Nichols creating content on the site. Like, we are just chock full of writers. Louis Hendricks from Nerd Crave. Like, the site is full of amazing content. So make sure that you check it out, electricsisterhood.com. And if you like us for our video game and anime news and reviews and editorials and more video content to come, guys, make sure that you check out all of the great shows that live and breathe underneath our banner. That includes, like I said, King Baby Duck over at b3crew.com. The podcast is No Borders, No Race. It too is celebrating its 10-year anniversary this year. So make sure that you hit up the site and you check it out. If you like indie stuff, music, anime, manga, theater, TV, shit, anything entertaining, make sure that you check out b3crew.com. There's great, great stuff coming over there. And you might even learn a little Japanese. So there you go. Also, make sure that you check out the homie Hamsterman2049. He does live streams on Twitch every Wednesday night. We post them on our Facebook page. So you can grab the link, be part of that. Both new games and old, every system, you know, from, hell, SNES and Nintendo 64 through current consoles. You will definitely check it out. If you haven't seen his Layers of Fear playthrough, you really should. So make sure that you check out Hamsterman2049 at smashrook.com, on our site, and live streams on Twitch every Wednesday night at 9 Eastern. Then there's always the homie Phil the Issues Guy. Oh my god, I love him so much. You will too. Make sure you check out Phil's recap and review on YouTube. Over 300 episodes. You definitely want to check him out. You can be part of the show, be part of the chat, call in live. His recaps are absolutely hysterical. Hysterically entertaining. Phil's recap and review on YouTube. Subscribe to his channel. Visit theissuesprogram.com to check out all of his content. You will definitely, definitely improve your day by checking him out. And last but certainly not least, the homies over at nerdcrave.com. If it's nerdy and you're craving the knowledge, then you'll find it at nerdcrave.com. Anime, manga, comics, video games. If it's creative, if it's nerdy, they're talking about it at nerdcrave.com, so make sure that you check them out. Bookmark all of our sites. Hit us up on our social, facebook.com/landofesh, at ESH News on Instagram and Twitter. Let us know if there's something you want us to check out, if there's something that you want us to do a Let's Play on, if there's something that you want to see us unbox, because we've got more unboxing videos coming from all different kinds of creators and things like that. If you think that we should get into VR reviews, hit us up and let us know. And tell us you'd like us to check out. Wait, no, I found a way that you can do it without getting dizzy. Oh! So just hit us up on our social and let us know. Because we do this not only just for ourselves, but for you too. So as always, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next week, guys.
Peace.